जय गोपी जन्ना बल्लभा गिरिवरधारे यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन जामुना तीराभन छारे जमुना तीराभन छारे जया राधा मदाभ कुंज बिहारी जया राधा मदाभ कुंज बिहारी हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा 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 हरे हरे
जय ओम विष्णुपद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश श्रीमाधी सेवाइंग भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश श्रीमाधी सेवाइंग भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फौंदराचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराशिमं भागवतम की निताई गौर प्रेमनंदी ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डेवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू शिशि गुरु एंड श्री गौरांग
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the Summon Bonum, Chapter 10, entitled The Deliverance of the Yamuna Arjuna Tree. Text number 15.
Daridro Niraham Stambho Mukta Sarva Madairiha Krichan Jadrich Chayat Nopi Noti Tadditasya Param Tapaha Daridro Niraham Stambho Mukta Sarva Madair Iha Kritram Jadricha Jatnoti Tadditasya Param Tapaha Daridro Niraham Stambho Mukta Sarva Madair Iha Kritram Jadricha Jatnoti Tadhitasya Param Tapaha.
Please chant.
Daridraha, a poverty-stricken person.
Niraham Stambaha, is automatically free from all false prestige.
Muktaha, liberated.
Sarva, all.
Mandai, from false ego.
Iha, in this world,
kicham,
with great difficulty,
yadrichaya apnoti,
what he gains by chance from providence,
tat,
that,
he, indeed,
tasya,
his,
param,
perfect,
Tapaha,
austerity.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
A poverty-stricken man must automatically undergo austerities and penances because he does not have the wealth to possess anything. Thus, his full prestige is vanquished. Always in need of food, shelter and clothing, he must be satisfied with what is obtained by the mercy of Providence. Undergoing such compulsory austerities is good for him because this purifies him and completely frees him from false ego.
Purport.
A saintly person voluntarily accepts a state of poverty just to become free from material false prestige. Many great kings left their princely standard of living and went to the forest to practice austerities according to Vedic culture, just to become purified. But if one cannot voluntarily accept such austerity, is put into a situation of poverty, he automatically must practice austerity. Austerity is good for everyone because it frees one from material conditions. Therefore, if one is very much proud of his material position, putting him into poverty is the best way to rectify his foolishness. Daridriya doso guna rasinasi. When a person is poverty stricken, naturally his full pride in aristocracy, wealth, education, and beauty is smashed. Thus corrected, he is in the right position for liberation. Omagyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshur ummilitam yena tasmai sri gurube namaha. Namo om Vishnu padaya Krishna prasaya bhutale shrimate Ramapada swami iti namine. Namo om Vishnu padaya Krishna prasaya bhutale shrimate Bhaktivedanta swami iti namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. The Vedic culture is naturally organized to bring one in a very organic and a perfect way, perfectly organized, so one gradually elevates oneself to the point of spiritual consciousness, that one consciousness becomes elevated. So it's a social structure that allows the individuals in society to actually progressively elevate in consciousness. So the whole principle behind the culture, the Vedic culture, is self-realization. To understand that one is a spiritual being, and one have to regain that spiritual consciousness. That our position in this material world is a position of is unnatural, is not compatible to our constitution, our spiritual constitution. So the pursuit of happiness in the material world through the enjoyment of the senses, or sense gratification, is decried. It's something that has to be evolved. It's something that we have to overcome, because it's not compatible to who we are. Therefore, it's called an illusory position. So the conditioned soul is explained that it's in Maya. Maya is that is not, something that is illusory. And in that illusory position, one recognizes himself falsely for something that we're not. So that is called the Ahamkara, or the false ego. So the whole system is organized to help us overcome that illusion. So there is a natural progression, taking into consideration that we are actually conditioned, that we have this bodily conception of life. So the system of Vanashram, it was designed by Krishna to help conditioned souls move very naturally to the position of self-realization. So there is these two aspects, Varna and Ashram. Varna refers to the different the way of engaging oneself according to the body, the nature that we have with the body that we receive. So according to that nature, there's a particular occupation that will basically engage the living entity in the particular tendency, natural tendency that one has. Very natural. So someone who is purely in a mortal passion, and so you have kshatriyas, controllers, builders, like that. And someone who is in the mortal goodness, there's a brahmana. So there's all these occupations, and passion and ignorance combined is vaishyas, and ignorance is sudras. So according to whatever influence we have by the modes of nature, there's a certain occupation, and with that occupation, there's certain religious principles and duties that have been prescribed. So it's very well, very, very nicely ordered and organized. And then you have the ashrams, in which one becomes acquainted and educated in the principle of life, the goal of life, which is self-realization. In Vedic culture, even simple people understand that they're not this body, and they have to follow religious principles, and there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like that. So so it's a very wonderful system. Within that system, then one have to pass through different stages. So one has one occupation, and within that occupation, the principles of religious give us these four goals. In the Vedas, usually these are, you know, the four standard goals, which is dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And they come together and they progressively, so dharma, artha, kama comes together in the stage in which we are conditioned by the bodily conception. But by the proper execution of these, following the religious principles, you naturally move towards moksha, towards the stage of moksha, which is renunciation and focusing on liberation as a goal. So it's a culture that is meant for elevation. And then you have in the ashram, there's also the different stages that are given. So brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. So during the grihastha portion, brahmachari prepares you to properly execute grihastha ashram. In general, it's like that. Most 99% of individuals have to go through the four ashrams. Few individuals can skip the grihastha ashram and move directly to the maintain renunciation. So in general, the student life, brahmachari, prepares you to properly execute grihastha ashram. And during the brahmacharya, you become acquainted with the scriptures, you become acquainted with the moral goodness, and you become acquainted with a life of servitorship and also of renunciation. You get a taste for that. The simplicity, the cleanliness, the worship of the deities, all this, you know, Brahminical culture. Because the prevailing culture that is there, the dominating culture, is the Brahminical culture. That's why the Brahminical culture represents the head of society. So Brahminical culture guides the whole social body. So that's the prevailing, you know, principle of education. That's what guides the whole society. The whole culture is based on Brahminical principles. So when we enter Grihastha ashram, then in Grihastha ashram, the necessity to pursue these four goals is there. Especially also in Grihastha ashram, you put emphasis on the three goals: Dharma, Artha, and Kama, on the religious principles. So Dharma is dominating religious principles, and then economic development, wealth, and sense gratification is there, but is regulated by Dharma. So there's a dharmic way of obtaining wealth and using wealth. And there's a dharmic way of sense gratification. Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita that he is that sense gratification. Kama abiruddho, what is it? Dharma abiruddho kama smi. I am kama. Kama means sense gratification. But dharma abiruddho, that kama that is according to religious principles, Krishna is present there, fully present. So naturally, by following religious principles and by regulating these desires to enjoy and to control, to accumulate wealth, then when you regulate them, you start to develop some detachment, and gradually that detachment grows with becoming more purified by following the process of religious principles, the duties of religious principles. So for example, for Grihasthas, charity is a must. For Grihasthas, also worshipping of the deities is very important. And like that, all kinds of different regulations are there that purifies ones. And the natural process, the natural progression is that at one point, one is able to fully renounce, to accept, to give up all what one has accumulated of material facilities, wealth, prestige, position, and take the vow of poverty. So one moves towards the stage of renunciation. So from Grihasthas, we move naturally to Vanaprastha. Vanaprastha, when both husband and wife abandons their position, their home, and during the Vedic times, they will go into the forest and would take the process of austerities and accept the vow of poverty. They will depend on providence for food, for shelter, for clothing, and they will be satisfied with whatever is obtained by the mercy of providence. They won't be taking care of their bodies. There's a description, they would dress with bark clothing, right? We heard that some time ago Narada Muni was given the descriptions of the different varnas and ashrams to Maharaj Yudhisthira. I think it was the 8th canto. So one voluntarily and naturally accept that, because through the process of religiosity, through the process of dharma, through the process of purification, one starts to realize that the material entanglement is like a anchor to our existence in this material world. And Krishna explains what is exactly that doesn't. He says that if one wants to progress in the path of self-realization, our intelligence has to become focused. Vyavya Sajadmika Buddhi. While we're sort of involved in our, you know, bodily conception of life, even within the regulations of dharma, our intelligence is many branched, bahushakka hyanantascha. So in this bahushakka buddhi intelligence, we're preoccupied with many different things. We have to create wealth, we have to maintain family, we have to do this duty, that duty, this, all these different duties that are prescribed in the Vedas. We have to satisfy this, we have to satisfy the demigods, we have to make sure things are order and proper, like that. So, why is that? Why we have to go through all that? Well, because we're attached. There is a principle that prevails this type of position. And Krishna explains that, Boga Aishwarya Prasaktanam. He says that this desire for sense enjoyment and material opulence. The lady came? Huh? Oh, you closed it off. We saw her somewhere way up there. Yeah, so may take her a time to. So Boga and Aishwarya, and that's with people who follow the Vedas. I mean, Krishna is not talking here of demons or demoniac society. He's talking about Vedic society. So it's a natural thing. It's a symptom of material conditioning, that we are attached to sense gratification, enjoyment, and material opulence. So, and also Krishna explains that the problem is when one is bewildered by such things. Tvaya aprahita chetasan, when our intelligence, our consciousness is bewildered by this desire for sense gratification and material opulence. Because if you're not bewildered, then you're fine. Then it becomes an asset for self-realization. And the example of great personalities with great wealth, Krishna gives the example later of Maharaj Janaka, that by the performance of his duties, and he got, you know, great wealth. He obtained perfection. He became one of the 12 Mahajans. But when one is bewildered by such things, then vyavya sajadmika buddhi samadao na vidiyate. That focused determination that is required that single-pointed intelligence doesn't take place. So, when one is in that progressive elevation of consciousness, one recognizes that this is the obstacle. Krishna is telling us, and then we start to, oh, I see, this is what is happening. So a natural progressive individual who is going through the process of Krishna consciousness as designed by Krishna. In the Sri Upanishad, he says there is no other alternative but to follow this system that Krishna has given us. We can live 100 years happy following this system. We can aspire for that. There's no alternative. So this principle of the Ishabashya principle. So if one is following that, if one is within that, then you naturally start to understand and naturally start to move towards renunciation. It happens very naturally. So at one point, it is expected that one we voluntarily accept the vows of poverty and renunciation and start to fully depend on Krishna for our maintenance and our protection. Now, if we are not there, if we become bewildered by these things, if our intelligence becomes covered and we remain attached to obtaining this artha and kama, this wealth, prestige, good birth, all these material boons that comes out of piety, that are the result of piety, of religious life, if that becomes our goal and not self-realization, but to elevate our standard of sense gratification, then the natural result is that you will be put into a position of poverty anyway. Nature will force you. So in your next life, you will be put in a situation of at one point you lose everything. And nature have, Krishna designs nature to be corrective. So when you start to misuse all these things, not using it religiously, then you start to lose it, and then there's some punishment for correctiveness. It's a tricky thing, and there's a very nice story that illustrates this very much. It's a famous story that Krishna tells Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita, the son of the Avanti Brahmana. And that what wealth, what opulences, what good birth, education, all these things does is a razor. It's a double-edged razor. It's dangerous. If you handle it, you have to handle it carefully. You have to know what you do, because you cut yourself very easily. Therefore, you know, we receive so many warnings that we have to be careful about the thing. In fact, better to avoid them. You know, Queen Kunti say this, Jaima Swariya Sruta Sribir Edan Edamana Madapunam. Is she said that one who is on the path of material progress trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education and bodily beauty cannot approach you sincerely with sincere feeling. So when one possesses all these things, naturally one becomes, you know, the good qualities. If one becomes a little too absorbed on those things, the good qualities start to disappear. So therefore, Queen Kunti prefers that one is in the position of this akinchana gochara, that is materially exhausted, this daridra position, poverty stricken, is a much more favorable position for calling for the personality of Godhead, because these things are regardless, you become, it can cover you at any moment. Even a person of great education and position can become bewildered by power, by wealth, and we see so many examples in the scriptures of this. Kings that are bewildered by that, other personalities, like, you know, they forget the story of Yamunacharya. We remember that, how he was, you know, as a child, he was this powerful, elevated personality. And then when he gained the kingdom, by his spiritual intelligence, then he forgot about everything, and he had to be rescued by his spiritual preceptor. No, it was Namalvar, or one of the Alvars, you know, make the arrangement to actually bring him back. But the point is that these things are very powerful and make you forget. You become absorbed. So therefore, they naturally have to be giving up when it's progressive. So Krishna tells the story of the Avanti Brahmana, that he explains that in this place Avanti, many, many, many thousands of years, very old, you know, story. There was this Brahmana who was very wealthy, but he was very heartless. He was influenced by greed He was influenced by greed. He was very harsh towards people. He wouldn't speak anything good to anyone, even to his family members. And he was a miser too, so meaning that he won't utilize his wealth even for his own welfare, what to speak of his family. So therefore, people didn't like him. His family members didn't like him. His wife didn't like him. And he didn't have, you know, but because he have wealth, he have power and influence. So people, you know, were depending on him, but they didn't like him. He was very proud, very harsh. And because of that pride, he basically forbade. He didn't perform, he didn't use his wealth for a proper religious, in a religious manner. So eventually what happened is that all the wealth was taken away. And when the wealth was taken away, then everybody abandoned him and rejected him. So he was left with nothing and with no one. But because he was an educated person, he was a Brahmana, he started to introspect, he started to reflect on his position. And while reflecting in his position, he came to the proper understandings. And he accepted, he came to the conclusions as through introspection of the proper path. So there's something very interesting things that he says about wealth. I'm going to read some of the reflections of the Avanti Brahmana in terms of what wealth does to anyone. And mind that we're talking here about Vedic society. Right now we're living in a non-Vedic society in Kali Yuga, that is, even these things are even more pronounced and without the control and the regulations of Vedic culture. So it's demoniac culture. So it's even more pronounced, you know, pride and harshness and all these things that people with wealth, you know, most in general have, you know, and the extreme divisions that are there, you know, right now in politics. Nowadays you hear about the 1% and the 99%. So the 1%, most of the wealth that is in this part of the world is in the hands of 1%. And 99% are just like, you know, day-to-day type of thing, you know. So it's a big gap of, you know, wealth that is not being used for the benefit of the whole society. So there is this greed that is there that prevails the accumulation of wealth. So the Avanti Brahmana, he introspect and start to see about how he got to that position, and he started to lament, not for what he lost, but how his actions, how the things that he did caused all this, you know, difficulties for himself and for others too. Generally, the wealth of misers never allows them any happiness in this life because they're self-torment, and when they die, it sends them to hell. So meaning that someone with wealth, they expended energy, he thinks, he thought, I spend my energy accumulating, working so hard to accumulate, and working so hard to protect in anxiety all the time. So it's self-torment. Whatever pure fame is possessed by the famous, and whatever praiseworthy qualities are found in the virtuous, are destroyed even by a small amount of greed, just as one attractive physical beauty is ruined by the trace of white leprosy. In the earning, attainment, increase, protection, expense, loss, and enjoyment of wealth, all men experience great labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. Now, this is very interesting here, what he says in the verse that I'm going to read right now, because he tells how the greed for wealth, what it does to people. And that's, again, anyone, pious devotees, anyone who's still conditioned, even, you know, within a nice Vedic society, we're talking here about a pious Brahmana who by the previous birth of piety obtained the position of a Brahmana with wealth. So it's an educated person, educated in the principles of Vedic culture. So thief, violence, speaking lies, duplicity, loss, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, faithlessness, envy, and the dangers caused by woman, gambling, and intoxication are the 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. Although these qualities are undesirable, men falsely ascribe value to them. One desiring to achieve the real benefit of life should therefore remain aloof from undesirable material wealth. Even a man's brothers, wife, parents, and friends united with him in love will immediately break off their affectionate relationship and become enemies over a single coin. For even a small amount of money, these relatives and friends become very agitated and their anger is inflamed. Acting as rivals, they quickly gave up all sentiments of goodwill and will reject ones at a moment's notice, even to the point of committing murder. Those who obtain human life, which is prayed for even by demigods, and indeed and that human birth become situated as first-class Brahmana, are extremely fortunate. If they disregard this important opportunity, they are certainly killing their own self-interest and thus achieve a most unfortunate end. So anyway, he goes like that, understanding the great mistake that he made, how he misused his position for simply pursuing a life of sense gratification that it was not even sense gratification, it was just basically the greed of power and wealth, of controlling. So he understood that that he now in the position of poverty, in the position that he have anything, it was very good for him to actually correct himself. So he took the position of sannyas. He took the position of Tridandi sannyas. And he changed his clothing. He took the danda. And he stayed in the town of Avanti. But the people of Avanti, when they hated him so much, when they saw the man dressed like a sannyas, they didn't believe him. And they started to abuse him. They will call him names. They say, this man, this is a hypocrite. Look, now because he doesn't have any money, he dresses a sannyasi just for people to give him something. But he never gave anyone before. So why should you give him? So they will spit on him, they will beat him with sticks, they will push him, you know, even when he got, you know, some little food by some providence, people will come and throw garbage at him, and the children will come and urinate in his bowl, his begging bowl, you know, in his food. So he was abused and abused and abused. But this Avanti Brahmana was the whole loss of everything corrected him. So he persevered. He remained in that position of accepting whatever he have to go through, and remain fixed. His Vyavya Sajadmika Buddhi was very well in place. So he understood that There's no one to blame but his mind. Because in his mind, if he becomes disturbed by all these different things that are happening, the abuse that he was receiving is because the mind is still connected to the body. So he became very advanced. So for a person of that is naturally pious, a devotee, this punishment is a grace of Krishna that he takes away. And, you know, Prabhupada explains like that, Krishna is known as Hari because he favors the devotee by takes away the things that becomes obstacles for the devotee. So in the case of these two brothers, Nalakubara and Managriva, then Narada Muni extended the mercy of the Lord by taking away. And in that position of having nothing, like trees have nothing, then they will be corrected. They naturally become introspective. And they're now eligible for liberation. So it's a very important principle. And what Prabhupada tells us in the purport is that we naturally, voluntarily move to that. If we don't do it voluntarily, Krishna is going to help us. So better do it voluntarily, and we avoid ourselves, you know, some unnecessary pain and shock, you know. Any comments or questions? Yeah, get your microphone.
Hare Krishna, bro. Thank you for a nice class. I have one question. Like, as you mentioned, the Kinkunti prayers, that the person who are having material opulence, they don't call out the name of Lord very feelingly, in compared to the person who don't, like, who are materially impoverished. But at the same time, we see the person who are poor, if they they used to struggle to meet their today needs of activities, like basic necessity of life. So it's hard to focus on spiritual progress. So how to understand these two part? Like both, it seems like both are contradictory kind of thing.
You said the person, the second example is the person who?
Like the persons who are poor, like what I have seen in India, like poor person, they basically do very struggle hard to maintain their basic necessities. So it's very hard to focus on spiritual life. So how to understand that two things?
Yeah, you have to have some understanding of where shelter is. Because poverty also can lead you to, you know, further down in the mode of ignorance like that. So it's not progressive, but it's, you know, it's a result of a continuous position of impiety or irreligiosity like that. So you're in a hellish situation. And by hellish situations, you know, the living entity, by suffering, once becomes corrected, you know. So it may take more lifetimes if you're in that position that is not progressive, but if you have a background that is pious, and you don't have, you go through a position of suffering, but you're pious, you know, that's one of the four some of the four individuals that comes, Chatur, whether Chaturvidha, Bhajanteman, Jnana Sukritino Arjuna, right? So Sukritinos, and then Artha Jigyasar Artati. So Artho is someone who is in great difficulty, with no wealth, poverty, that is looking for some relief. So if one have that background of piety, you naturally turn towards Krishna. You know, you start to call. Now, Prabhupada explains that, you know, when one have that motivation, you know, you may obtain wealth and then forget about Krishna. But because you're pious, you know, so if Krishna shows some favor, he will take it away and allow you to, you know, come closer to him, you know, maintain you in that position, you know, of dependence. So in general, you see, devotees are not very wealthy because wealth is very dangerous, you know. Wealth will be given to some devotees who are wealthy is because they're able to manage it. You can, they won't take him away from Krishna. So when they're favored by Krishna like that. So in one sense, it will depend if you have the background of piety, but if you have the background of irreligiosity, duskritina, then there's no progress. It's just, you know, it's, you're going down. And so you have to suffer Krishna caste, demoniac mentality, demonian people into lower species and hellish situation life after life. And then through that process, they, you know, eventually start to make themselves again up. So there's a learning process by ordeal. That's how life in this material world is designed to. But for us devotees, you know, we know the principle is something that either we do it voluntarily or Krishna help us, you know. But with the background of piety, we can progress. We can get, we know where the shelter is naturally. Is that all right?
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. I really love that Avanti Brahmana story and that verse you quoted in there where family members will kill each other even over a single coin. And I've heard many lottery stories where their families and girlfriends will kill them like the next day once they get hold of the money, I heard. But that story reminded me of, I'm not sure if you heard in the Bible, Noah's Ark, where the God told Noah, there's a flood coming because the people of the world are so wicked. So I need you to build a ship, an ark, in order to survive. And it, with this Avanti Brahmana, the reason I appreciate it is because the Brahmana, he had an ocean, a flood of karma coming towards his way. And he took the advice of Lord Brahma given in the Bhagavatam, Tate anukampam susa michamano bunjana eva makritam vipakam. Rebhag vapurbir vidadam namaste jiveta yomuti padi sadayabhat. Brahma says that we have an ocean of karma coming to flood our life. But the great devotees, they don't try to control the ocean or a flood because you can't. So what do? They build character, just like Noah built a ship. So there's the nice quote that says, ships don't sink because of the water around them. Ships sink because of the water that gets in them. We can't stop everything on the outside. Opposition, criticism, rumors, traffic, or karma. But if we allow what's on the outside to get on the inside, then we'll sink. And we see this Avanti Brahmana, his food was urinated on, he was spit at, so many things. and we disagree with the devotees and we file complaints. Guru Maharaj, I have a letter complaining. So I just find that kind of like hilarious. So when somebody spreads rumors about you or criticizes you, it's because you've done the same thing, but you don't try to retaliate, because I'm just as sinful, so I don't retaliate. So that's what I appreciate about that Avanti Brahmana passing. But my question is, you pretty much covered these points in Prabhuji's questions, and I'll just kind of reiterate from different perspectives, because like you said, sometimes when a devotee is poor, devotees poor or rich, people poor or rich could be sinful, or people rich, poor or rich could be devotees. So obviously there's no set rules, because sometimes, but in this verse, when we hear that when you were poverty stricken, of course, devotees always consider themselves humble and sinful, of course. But when we hear verses like this, we think, oh yes, a person who's poor, they're sinful. And a person's rich, they must have bhakti. And if this was the case, that means all the CEOs have way more bhakti than Srila Prabhupada, because they have way more property, way more powers. And there's one pastime that I really appreciate in this regard. I was discussing with Sridhar Anand Prabhu, because this is the story about Kolavesha Sridhar. And Lord Chaitanya approached Kolavesha Sridhar, the banana seller. He was poverty stricken his whole life. He had practically nothing, literally. He had holes in his clothes. His house was, you know, just straw. And so Lord Chaitanya approached him and he says, my dear Kolavesha Sridhar, it's a scenario we all deal with sometimes to question our faith in Krishna. He says, my dear Kolavesha Sridhar, atheists and demigod worshipers, they're rich. Why are you worshiping Krishna? Like, what's your problem? You know, what is he giving you? And so Kolavesha Sridhar, he said a very philosophical and very profound spiritual answer. I don't remember exactly, but some lessons throughout the Bhagavatam that is described is that even if somebody has material wealth on the outside, if they don't have spiritual wealth on the inside, then at minimum, you can't keep your peace of mind. And at maximum, you can't keep your family, your friends, your property, and you're put in jail. We see politicians all the time, same story. You know, they lose all they have wealth, but then they can't keep it. And that's the maximum. But at minimum, you can't keep your peace of mind. So there's a quote that says, you would never invite a thief into your house. So why would you allow thoughts that steal your joy to make themselves a home in your mind? So we see, even if you're able to keep your material wealth throughout their whole life, and even if we say this is bhakti, so what? But you're not able to keep your spiritual wealth, your peace of mind, and you're always taking antidepressants instead of taking the medicine of humility. So my final question is regarding Queen Kunti's prayers, and maybe you could expand on it. You were quoting Queen Kunti's prayers where it says, if we have these opulences, we can't feelingly call to the Lord. Now, one opulence, among the opulences, she only mentioned like a few opulences, but Krishna has six opulences, and one of them is renunciation. And we see in the pastimes, if you have renunciation, you can't feelingly call to the Lord, because you think, I'm pure, I'm the controller of this renunciation. Like Rana Swami, he said a very nice quote. He says, Srila Prabhupada was once asked by a devotee for permission to renounce everything. Srila Prabhupada's response was, Krishna owns everything, so what do you have to renounce? The only thing you have to renounce is the misconception that you have something to renounce. So money is an opulence. So renunciation is also opulence. Krishna could give and he could take away. So the problem is that sometimes when we have renunciation, like Durvasa Muni, we think I could criticize anyone, like Sobari Muni. I feel good about myself, not realizing that Krishna is Hrishikesha. So when we see when Sobari Muni thought he was the controller of his senses, he committed an aparadha. He couldn't feelingly call to the Lord. Krishna took that. He made him poverty stricken with perversity. He married 50 girls after that. And so my question is that how does one, for example, because the tendency is that when we don't have renunciation, we become very depressed and discouraged.
Fire the question that is getting
This is the question. When we don't have renunciation, we become very depressed. And when we do have renunciation, we become very disrespectful and arrogant because of our position. You know, we think we could criticize and chastise anyone. So what are some steps we could do to not become so puffed up because of our position or we have renunciation? And how to not be so depressed, you know, when we don't have renunciation? Because Krishna could give, he could take away. He puts us in so many scenarios.
Well, His Holiness Rupa Swami, he just recently touched on that Is in some of the, I think it was in Prabhupada's purport on the verse, that without bhakti, all these different qualities are the result of all these different qualities that comes out of piety, including renunciation, knowledge, good birth, wealth, beauty, all these things, the results of piety. Without Krishna consciousness, without bhakti, the result is pride. And so there's no spiritual elevation, but it's just pride. It's devoid of a spiritual elevation. So for us, our life have to be guided by bhakti, by the principles of bhakti. And with that, whatever Krishna give us, or whatever gift we have, you know, then it will be, again, spiritual. It will be something that can be given as an offering to Krishna. But if we're becoming proud for the results of our devotional service, or the soul of our work, or our, you know, whatever we receive, then you can understand that it's a symptom that is, we're not being properly guided, or we're not taking the guidance of bhakti. So pride is a good gauge to understand what we're missing, that we're not doing something, you know, good or right. So we can be introspective and then backtrack a little bit and try to take the corrective measure, which is go back to our spiritual reality, you know, service, following the instructions of Guru and Krishna, like that. Okay. Garantarashimam Bhagavatam Ki Jai.